That could be very important for this morning. We could come back to it. I could be wrong. Ross said in his introduction earlier on, I don't know if you noticed him saying it, that I actually think this is the most important sermon I've ever given. That may need a little bit of explanation. This is something which has been bugging me for a very long time, and when something bugs me, when the thought keeps popping into my head, I start praying about it and thinking, what is this all about? And this has been going on probably for years, this buggedness that I have had over this particular topic. It's not strictly a biblical topic. It's not something you can say, oh yes, here are the key verses on this. It's something that's been going on in my head and in my heart for a long time, and it seemed that the time had come to share it. I haven't got it sorted out. This is very important. I haven't got it clear in my head what this is all about, and I'm reasonably confident that by 11 o'clock I will know a bit more than I do now, because I just trust you guys to come up with insights which are going to be useful. So, conversation. Let's start off with the thesis, which I developed a very long time ago. The only thing that creates long-term change in society is people exchanging ideas. The only thing that creates long-term change, produces long-term change in society, is people exchanging ideas, and they do that in a conversation, always. If somebody has a brilliant idea, if somebody one day thought, oh, look, hang on, instead of pushing these great big stones around on rollers, maybe we could make a kind of a cart thing with round bits on it and we could call them wheels. If he had never ever shared that thought, someone else would have thought of it, okay, but what I'm saying is that if you want change to happen, then ideas have to be shared, and that means conversation. And what I want to look at this morning is a particular conversation, which is the conversation which goes on within the Christian church, and I mean the church universal. Christians talking to each other is a good grief, they're leaving already. Conversation facilitates change. Sorry, I'm getting behind. And conversation facilitates change in the Christian church. The thing about conversation facilitating change is that we are all involved in conversations, and we are all facilitating change because we're exchanging ideas all the time. And within the Christian church, that means we're all part of change. And I think the Christian church needs to change, needs always to be changing. It's never going to be exactly what God wants. Therefore, we should always be thinking, okay, what change is necessary? And how do I pass that change on? How do I encourage others to think about that change? What I'm going to do now is go through a whole series of quotes. Most of them are biblical, two of them aren't. Both of the ones that aren't are from Christian writers and thinkers. So I just want you to read these, and I'll read them out loud. Just hold them in your heads and your hearts while I'm going through these, and then we'll come back to quite a few of them and look at them in a bit more detail. So here we go. Start with Richard Rohr. Most of us were taught that God would love us if and when we change. In fact, God loves you so that you can change. What empowers change, what makes you desirous of change, is the experience of love. It is that inherent experience of love that becomes the engine of change. Several quotes from Jesus and from other bits of the Bible. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. Do to others as you would have them do to you. This one, another one. This is Joseph Joubert, who is a French philosopher. You may not have come across him. I haven't come across him until I came across this quote. I just thought it was so good. The aim of argument or discussion should not be victory, but progress. And we will definitely be coming back to that one later on. For God, all things are possible. Jesus again. One of the ones we had. Master, said John, we saw someone driving out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he is not one of us. Emphasis added. Do not stop him, Jesus said, for whoever is not against you is for you. The Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Okay, so that's all the quotes that I just wanted you to take on board, missile up inside your heads and your hearts, and we will now look at some of them in a bit more detail. How should we Christians conduct ourselves in this conversation that we're all part of? Jesus said, I give you a new commandment that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another. By this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. And I just want to move straight on to another one. Do to others as you would have them do to you. So in this conversation that we're all part of, this conversation which is going to change the Christian church, and we'll come back to that and talk about how we're going to do that in a bit. We have to behave in a particular manner, which Jesus says is love, which Jesus says is treating other people the same way you'd like to be treated yourself. Now for me, the way I like to be treated is certainly with love, but let's say respect is very important. Affection is very important. Good humour is very important. I like to be treated with good humour. And I like people to listen to me. Are there other things that people really, really would like, other people would like to treat them? Is that a good enough list to be going with, Trish? Goodwill? Yes, goodwill. Yeah, yeah. Did I mention listening? Good, okay. I think that's extremely important. I like to be listened to. And if you're talking about a conversation which is going to engender change, then put it this way. God is a good parent, right? With me so far? Good. Okay, sorry. I'm having trouble with this because I really don't know where it's going. God is a good parent, and a good parent wants their children to get out there and be involved in the world and make the world a better place. But a good parent wants their child to learn and to grow, right? Now, God as our parent, I think, will put us into any situation, and he wants us to make a difference. He wants us to change things, yes, but he wants us to learn and he wants us to grow. So when we're in a conversation, we need to be thinking not only how do I direct this conversation, how do I contribute to this conversation, how do I influence others, but to keep at the same time and equally in our heads, what am I going to learn from this? What are other people saying? How am I going to change as a result of this conversation? And our tendency, well, mine is, I don't know whether everybody else is, but is to pile into a conversation full of ideas and the person's saying something and I'm thinking, yes, I know exactly how to respond to that. And I'm actually thinking about what I'm going to say much more than what they're going to say. And if there's one thing God's been saying to me in the last few months, it's listen. You know, all these other... What?
When you finished your sentence.
No. Have we got the microphone?
No. I just got a word.
A word? Oh, sorry, go on, yeah. I'll repeat it then. Yep, yep.
Patience.
Yep, love it. Okay. I like people to be patient with me. Therefore, I should be patient with others. Something else I'm not terribly good at. Yes, okay. Good. We'll move on. Joubert, the aim of argument or discussion should not be victory but progress. I love this guy. He's really dark in some of the things he says. One of the things he said was misery is almost always the consequence of thinking. Sorry, that's an aside. I didn't want to talk about it. I just found some of his stuff was wonderful. He was 18th century Catholic, French Catholic. Very, very smart guy. But he said this, the aim of argument or discussion should not be victory, but progress.
Just
Ken.
In there.
Hang on.
No. Progress. Stop it. Progress is a very, obviously it's going to depend on who you are, whether you think it's progress or not.
Yep.
If we go to his century and his country, the guillotine was created as progress towards humanitarian execution.
Yes, yes.
So just chucking it out there.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. Progress is not necessarily good, and all the things that we've done in the past. I'm sure that all the good and the evil things that we produced at the time are the result of communication, is the point that I was making. Yes, you're absolutely right. Progress within the Christian church should be progress towards what God wants us to be. And hopefully will not involve guillotines. It has involved bonfires and all sorts of other things in the past. Hopefully we're moving on. Where was I? I've lost it, but never mind. Progress is... No, I think I've covered it. If you're going to get involved in a conversation, then the conversation, the purpose of the conversation is not that you win. The purpose of the conversation is that is understanding, is communication. In fact, to put it another way, I would suggest that a conversation is an end rather than a means, or a conversation is an end as well as a means. And I suspect that the conversation that's going on in the Christian church at the moment is actually an end in itself. It is very good that we communicate with each other, that we have a conversation. It is very important that we have a conversation, and that conversation is positive. We've often talked in this church about the process of coming to a decision is as important as the decision itself. We've done that several times when we've been faced with big situations. I think that's part of it, that the process of discussing things actually brings you together and is very, very good for the body. And I'm sure that's true for the church universal as well as for this body. So the aim of discussion should not be victory but progress. Who should we be in conversation with? This is a good bit. Master, said John, we saw someone driving out demons in your name and we tried to stop him because he is not one of us. Let's go on to that next slide. For God, all things are possible. This really thumped me the other day, this idea that for God, all things are possible. Is God working everywhere? You know, the answer would be yes. Is God trying to achieve his purposes everywhere? The answer must be yes. Does that mean that God is working in every single Christian denomination? Yes. Does it mean that he's working in Islam, in Judaism, in Buddhism? Is he working absolutely everywhere in the world? I think the answer has to be yes. Is he working in Westboro Baptist Church? The answer has to be yes. Does everybody here know what Westboro Baptist Church is? No, it's a tiny church in America. It has 40 members, and almost all of them are related to each other. They're the same thing. And it's become incredibly famous simply because, if you want to go to its website, the website is called GodHatesFags.com. Might be .org, but never mind. That's the name of the website. It is a church which is based on hate, on telling everybody what you shouldn't do, what you mustn't do. It's anti-gay, it's anti-Muslim, it's anti-Jew, it's anti just about everything. And it gets a tremendous amount of publicity. 40 people. Is God working there? Well, sorry, I've digressed again. I think, yes, that God must be working there, because for God all things are possible. So this means that God is working in all Christian denominations. So how does our conversation go when we are talking with people from different denominations, or when we are talking about people from other denominations? Now, I grew up in a very conservative evangelical church, and a lot of us have been involved in the Presbyterian Church, and both those groups are strongly anti-Catholic. This goes right back to Luther and all that kind of stuff. When I first became an elder in the Presbyterian Church, the minister, Ian Robinson, said, "You have to sign the Westminster Confession. Whatever you do, don't read it." Like an idiot, I didn't read it. And he then went off to Sydney, and I had to cop what happened afterwards at Karawara Church. But it says in there that the Pope is the Antichrist in the Westminster Confession of Faith. It's funny, because the way I was brought up was believing that Catholics, that certainly God wasn't working in the Catholic Church. And yet here we are today, things have changed, and Protestants are realizing what a tremendous amount of wonderful spiritual maturity exists in the Catholic Church. And we've just had two quotes from the Catholics there. We've had videos of Henry Nguyen, which are, you know, a wonderful godly man, Richard Rohr, another one, and there's plenty of others. And there is this recognition, largely, I think, in the Protestant church today, boy, do I see the kingdom coming in this respect, that the denominations are really starting to talk to each other. What about Jehovah's Witnesses? What about Mormons? We've had people from the Islamic community come and speak in this church. We've never had people from the Mormons or the Jehovah's Witnesses. Would we think about doing that? And if we wouldn't do, why not? Is it possible that God's working among the Mormons or the Jehovah's Witnesses or not? Is fear an issue there, as far as this conversation is concerned? The church that I grew up in, there was a Bible college nearby called Moorlands Bible College, Moorlands. And we had quite a lot of interaction with the students there. And then one day someone came in with some people who he'd met who he said, oh, Christian friends of mine. And they said, oh, yes, well, where are you from? And they said, we're Mormons. And the person thought he said, because he just didn't, was not, it was not possible that he could have heard the person say those words. So he said, he thought they said, we're from Moorlands. And he said, oh, good, wonderful, you know, come here, sit down. When at that meeting they realized suddenly who these people were, they stopped the meeting. Literally stopped the meeting and moved everybody out of the church. You know, we are not going to have a meeting in which Mormons are present. I don't know what you do when they turn up on your doorstep, depending on who's in the house and other things, what I'm up to. I often ask them to come in for conversations. I've had conversations with Jehovah's Witnesses and with Mormons, and I have to tell you, some of them are spiritual people. Some of them are people who have a relationship with God that I can just relate to. I can understand it, you know. Right. Shall we move on? The Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance. The Lord looks on the heart. This verse, I think, is so important. I don't think I'm going out on too much of a limb if I say that I think what this tells us is that God sees us as individuals. He sees all human beings as individuals. And the way he looks at us is to look at our heart. We human beings find that very difficult to do, to look at other human beings as individuals. Because what we do when we come across someone is, first of all, we have to work out what sort of a person they are so we can put them in a group. We can then decide how we're going to respond to them by how we feel about that particular group. Within the church, within the community at large, you've got these two words, liberal or conservative, you know, and people hear me, come across me in the Christian community, online, at those, wherever it might happen to be, fairly quickly they say liberal. And how they respond to me it is going to depend on whether they regard themselves as liberal or conservative. We just have to put people into groups and we have to label them and we then sort of say, okay, this is what that kind of person is. We find it very difficult to see people as individuals. But God looks at the heart. He sees us as individuals. And I have absolutely no doubt that he expects us, wants us, intends us to see others as individuals. So it's not that this person is a Mormon, it's Fred, you know. I'm going to talk to Fred about God. It's not that this person is a member of the Westboro Baptist Church. It's you know, it's an individual human being. And we need to get that. We need to really act on that. Yeah, we're getting rather close to the end of what I wanted to say. So, hang on. Just as I've loved you, you so should love one another. Loving one another is something which must be done on a one-to-one basis. You can love groups of people, possibly, but basically, it's how you come across to another individual person which shows your love. And just this is actually the last slide. It is that inherent experience of love that becomes the engine of change. Richard Rohr again. That's a complicated sentence. I'm actually going to leave that there, and you're going to enlighten me on what you think about all this. We've got 20 minutes. Oh, I don't believe this.
Well, you wanted a comment, so yeah. I'll offer something. Your previous comment about seeing others as individuals and not as categories, and we see that everywhere we go, because categorization and classification are a necessary part of human intelligence. That's how we make sense of the world. We lack God's infinite processing capability. The entire universe exists in his mind as something that he brings into being moment by moment by his will. That's not true of us. So we do have our limits, and we have to know our limits. We have to know the limits of ourselves individually and as part of the human race. So I think we've got to accept that we are going to do that, but we still need to be able to reach beyond it. So it's important to know about categories, but not to say that that is the definition of a person. It helps us to orient ourselves, but I think we need to recognise that we're always going to do that, so that we can hold those things lightly, because I have encountered people who believe they see everybody as individuals, but don't, because they're as limited as I am. So it's something we need to be aware of in an ongoing way, is that we are going to continue to do this and to reach beyond that. And another point on that, I know that some people that I've met in my work, they have certain categories about certain people, Muslims, Aborigines, whatever. Those who they know personally, they see as exceptional. So there's the challenge when dealing not only with your own categories but other people's categories, is the realisation that some people will continue to hold stereotypes about a group of people, even if they know individuals from within that group that they can regard differently. And so this is something that needs to be addressed with great sensitivity, because... you go, but what about so-and-so? Oh, yeah, but he's different. And it's hard to reach beyond that sometimes.
Just a question and an observation. The question is, change is, talk about change as being the thing. Change from what to what? My observation being that as I grow through life, I realise the change is actually circular. It's taking me back to what emerged into the world before the world kind of had its way with me. But I wonder what you mean by change.
I don't have a destination, if that's what you mean. What, sorry?
Sounds like change is... just wondering what change means to you.
Well, you want to answer Ken's point? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hello, Paul.
Just Lee's throwing herself at other people's husbands again.
You get that. I just wonder whether it's one way of articulating that we're not perfect, we're imperfect, therefore there's always room for improvement.
Yes, there is always room for improvement. There's no doubt about it. We haven't got there yet, wherever
just
there
very
is.
Very carefully take this over to class.
Could you say growth rather than change? Would that...
That's...
Growth rather than change?
Yeah.
Yes. Good word, yeah. Tyson?
So I remember Richard Rohr once talking about the only person we can ever change is ourselves, and even that we can't really do very well. The other thing is, in you talking about conversation, the thoughts came to me that, actions speak louder than words. St. Francis said something about preach the gospel to everyone and use words if necessary. So that to me has been sitting there as well, that in our conversations, we're not trying to get someone else to change, we're trying to get enough understanding for ourselves to change. And, our actions are what people hear, not our words.
Yes. That's very Jesus. Yes.
Are you proposing that we should be engaging more with Christians in conversation? Or is this intended to be, when we happen to be engaging with other Christians, this is guidance for how we do it?
My feeling is that we should be actively doing it. This is something which didn't come up during the actual session, but I'm really worried about churches and the effect that churches has, and that as a church you tend to or a denomination, you tend to sort of say, yeah, there's this sense of we're right, you know, we've got it right. I hear it in this very church. I say it myself. You know, we're doing well. Those other guys, you know, this is what's wrong with their church and this is what's wrong with their church. And I think that is extremely... I think, yes, we do need to have much more conversation with people from other denominations, with people from other churches. I keep thinking, I don't have this all properly thought out. You know, that's the whole point about a conversation. It goes on and it goes on and it goes on. But yeah, I think, yes, we do need, we as a church, we need to have much more communication between people from different denominations, from different ways of thinking, and we need to be able to do that saying, yes, this person is also a brother or a sister in Christ. This person is also trying to serve God. They're not seeing things the way I do. They don't believe the same things that I do, but they are my brother and sister. I think we need to really grab hold of that somehow. Paul?
The best way to start a good conversation is to step outside the door.
Yes.
I think the biggest blockage to having the kind of conversations that you're advocating, I think you're advocating, is our church. I don't think it therefore follows that you have those conversations inside the church. And I haven't thought this through. I mean, I'm all for having those conversations outside because it's the great equaliser. You're not representing the baggage of any organisation. It's just you walking the road, struggling, yeah, trying to make sense. And when you meet a J-Dub or a Mormon or a Baha'i or whatever, we're all doing the same thing. But when we step inside our meetings, we are tacitly agreeing to a set of behaviours and assumptions about what we share in common. And we need to be respectful of those. They didn't get there by accident. We've consciously chosen to set some boundaries for the kinds of conversations that we have. And you have to be careful, therefore, that you then don't invite conversations that are hostile to the fundamental core set of shared beliefs, yes, and assumptions that, yeah, you have. If you particularly want to have those conversations, then you need to address your core sets of shared beliefs and understandings. So I haven't thought this through. I wouldn't feel comfortable with having a Mormon and a J-Dub come to speak with us, but I'm particularly interested in, I'm open to having a conversation with them outside of the organisations, yeah, and I haven't thought through why that is. One thing I have decided is that not every conversation is worth having. Because if you're going to have a conversation with someone, once you get past the pleasantries, you need to make a decision. Is this something I'm willing to follow through on? And there's nothing worse than a half-assed conversation where you ask closed questions because you just don't want the conversation to go any further. And I found myself doing that with Mormons and J-Dubs. It's not a conversation I'm particularly interested in anymore. I'm much more civil to them now. But I'll talk about anything except what they believe, as people. Mm. So there's a few different things there. I think I'd be very careful about having conversations which are hostile to the core assumptions that we share. And I'm happy for that to be challenged.
Yeah. Good. Excellent. Good.
When it was suggested that the wording could be changed, it is the inherent experience of love that becomes the engine of growth, which I agreed with, but then it occurred to me that it is the inherent experience of hate that it becomes the engine of decay.
Yes, good, good, very good. Trish?
Just following Paul's comment, I'm inspired by the Love Bendigo project. I don't know if anybody else remembers that, but there was a very strong anti-Islam thing going on in Bendigo where they were resisting strongly the idea of a mosque. And I don't know who it was that instigated it, but they said, let's have a picnic together. Mm-hmm. And they invited the Muslims to come and have a picnic with them, and it started a change of direction that became positive. And I'd love to do that here out in the park.
Mm. Yep. Do it often. Don't just do it once, I say. Yeah. Yeah. Paul?
Well, as you know, my attitude to Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses when they come to the door is always to tell them that I'm a believer, and that what I'm saying to them is I'm quite prepared for you to let me be because I'm prepared to let you be. What I would have to ask myself, I've changed from a position where I thought it was probably worse that Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons converted people than that they never believed anything. And so I suppose my feeling now is, yes, sure, go and talk to the people who don't believe. I don't mind that. I can live with that. But I don't want to be harassed because I think you don't respect what I believe. And I want to see that reciprocated by them, is that if they respect my belief, I'm prepared to respect what they believe.
Rose, did you have something else? Yep. Maybe.
I suppose just thinking about the context that conversations happen in. We're at a thing for the Christian Centre for Social Action last night. They were celebrating 20 years of being there. And lots of people stood up and talked, and quite a few about people who are now passed on. And somebody mentioned someone who I think was a Hindu who said, and I'm not sure whether she was a volunteer or a client or a bit of both, because there's lots of bits of both, and she'd said that she really felt sorry for you Christians because you've only got one God and we've got hundreds. And everyone just cackled. And it was just really peaceful because, you know, you could frame that as a very significant theological point. But you know, this was somebody who'd worked alongside or been alongside all the other people from all the other places, and what everyone was doing was serving God while they were rolling up their sleeves and cleaning toilets or whatever. And you know, the actual meaning of that moment was about love and was not about theological frameworks. There was a much deeper truth there.
Good.
Just thinking about what you said, Rose, was love one another as I have loved you in order that. And if we say in order that and dot, 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 and ponder about what that means, it could mean that one of the results of that might be that whole lots of churches will die. And that's not a bad thing if what is happening is what Rose said, is that people are loving people as Jesus has loved them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We sometimes assume that churches die means that God's not having God's way, but it could be that churches dying is God is actually
Absolutely.
Having God's way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, now you've got us going.
Yeah, good.
There's a fundamental, I think, accepted truth that actions speak louder than words, that what people do counts more than their formulations. I don't know if that's true, but that's what we say. If that's the case, then that quote that you had from Jesus where I was saying, don't worry about if they're not one of us, it's what you do that counts. And I just keep coming back to that. The way you assess whether a conversation is worth having is if the common ground that you're progressing to is a set of actions that you commonly agree are worthwhile to. So if what you're about is building up community, creating space, creating connections, it almost becomes, it's not quite, but it almost becomes irrelevant what kind of framework or worldview you come from. If your worldview leads you to doing the similar kinds of actions that you hold as important, then to me that counts for a lot.
Yeah. Just going back to what Ken just said, the bit after the bit where Jesus said, you know, my command is that you love one another. Is the next thing he said was, it's by your love for each other the world will know that you are my disciples. We are supposed to be setting this example. That's what Jesus wants us to do. And in terms of actions, not words, Jesus just kept on repeating the point the best illustration that I have is the two guys who were building the houses. One built with really good strong foundations, the other one didn't. The point of that story is that one of those heard the words of Jesus and didn't put them into action, didn't obey them, and he was the one whose house fell down. And the one who had the strong foundations was the one who heard the words of Jesus exactly the same, but put them into action. Oh, it is about action. Sheep and the goats, all those other, you know, the story of the Good Samaritan, it's all about loving your neighbour. Yes. Bryce, when was the last time you spoke in this church?
I'm just thinking how God sees us all, and I think he sees us all as one. And Obama said in a speech recently, you know, see yourself in others, see yourself in the other people. And he was talking about gay, straights, blacks, whites, and all that sort of stuff. But I think the same metaphor continues through in how we view other people, how God views us. He sees us as one. When people, and I think Paul's point about how we act, where people are acting in a destructive manner, well, we don't have anything to do with it, but we should be acting in love towards all. And probably some of these artificial separations, certainly the church has made a lot of artificial separations, and we look back in history and think, how did that happen? We're still doing it sometimes as well.
Yes. This might be the last point, possibly the most controversial, but it does lead on from that. These separations, I would say, have been caused by belief, that denominations have started up because they say, oh, those people have got it wrong, we've got it right, and they either their constitution or their statement of faith or something or other says, this is what we believe, and other people don't believe this, so that's where the differences come in. As I've often said, that Christianity is not about belief, which is some people find a bit difficult to believe, because Christians have been called believers from Jesus's time onwards, believing in the essentials, believing in that Jesus died, that Jesus rose from the death, that Jesus, you know, that kind of stuff, fine. But all the other stuff which we've put in since then, the doctrines and the rules and all those other things, which often define a denomination, they don't just define the denomination, they separate the denomination from other people. And this is not a good thing. I had the last word. Okay.